This is Enemy Combatant Radio, San Francisco, California. You're ready for the San Francisco Village Voice with your host, Misha Montes Azario. Here we are, Misha.
All right, good afternoon. Buenas tardes. Bon après-midi. This is your host, Misha Montes Azario from San Francisco Village Voice, La Voz de San Pancho. Orale. Today we got a beautiful guest. She's my heart here. She's a longtime fighter in the Bayview and the world. I call her local sister, global sister, Marie Harrison from Green Action, who is also a candidate for supervisor for District 10 in San Francisco. Thank you so much for coming, Marie.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Can you tell us a little bit the reason why you have decided to run for our district?
Well, it's no secret that things have, you know that old saying, the more things change, the more they remain the same?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in our particular situation, the more things change, the worse they're getting. We have actually taken three steps backwards to what we thought when we thought we were actually moving forward. And I honestly, truly do believe that San Francisco and yet our District 10, and that includes Bayview, Hunters Point, Petrel Hill, Little Hollywood, and Visitation Valley, and Sunnydale. I don't think that we can afford another 4 years of what's been happening. Matter of fact, I'm sure of it.
Can you tell us, like, the compounding effect of what has been happening? I understand there are many things going on. Police brutality, development, toxic air, the whole nine yards. Can you tell us a little more about that?
The idea is to connect all of the dots. When you start looking at the lack of unemployment for our district, it's kind of like a global move straight across District 10 to remove us, and that's how I believe the whole redevelopment plan, should
when
I say.
You say us, what do you mean?
I mean folks who live in the Southeast sector, and I say folks because a lot of people think because I'm black, I mean black folks. Well, there are a lot of black folks that have been affected, but believe it or not, Bayview, Hunters Point, and Petrel Hill and Little Hollywood and Visitation Valley and Sunnydale are not all black. Hasn't been for eons, okay? So we need to get away from that myth. We also need to get away from the myth that the only folks that are being affected are, as our present supervisor was overheard saying, those folks. And I'm assuming from what I was told, she meant those folks who didn't have any money. Well, since money doesn't describe what color you are, I'm saying those folks are us. So there's a lot of us, okay, and they don't have a color line. So we need to be very cognizant of what's going on. We have a redevelopment plan that has run amok. There is no way that they can tell us that redevelopment is a brand new redevelopment when there might be new faces,
mm-hmm.
but they're singing the same song and doing the same dance. I'm sorry. That's the old redevelopment to me. We have an opportunity for employment that skips over our district and goes on to higher ground. Do you know that rather than employ some of these hot-headed young men and women that are out there on those streets,
mm-hmm.
they would go not just across the water, but across the state lines. And I don't mean line, I mean lines, and bring folks
mm-hmm.
in here to do jobs that should be given to local folks. In Bayview Hunters Point alone, I can tell you for a fact that there is enough industry there in Bayview that each and every person who lives there should own at least 2.5 of those jobs. They could walk to work, which would save some of the pollution that's going on through the diesel and that kind of thing. We have a ton. We have the four largest single standing sources of air pollution right there in the Southeast sector. That doesn't just affect Bayview. It affects Petrel. It affects south of Market. It affects, Visitation Valley and Sunnydale. We have to be made to understand that all these things is like a circle that keeps widening itself. And why that circle is widening itself, we're being displaced. And Our political will is not there. There is no political will when it comes to folks who have no money there.
When do you think that started? Because I understand we're just now crying wolf about going to what happened to the film war in San Francisco.
We are not just
How
now
long
crying.
Ago was that plan in place to do ethnic cleansing and get homeowners and poor people out of Bayview?
Let me tell you something. The process may have slowed itself down, but years ago, at least 8 years ago, I remember writing a story for the Bayview because I said to the publisher at the time, people are not recognizing the symptoms. Before we take another step forward. We need to step back and see what's happening, because people are forgetting. They're getting comfortable. They're believing all the hype, and they're not watching what's going on around them. And what was happening 8 years ago, with the conversations start coming out of the back rooms and start gradually getting into the homes and to the voices of people who had a little money, you know. The only time it filters down to us poor folks is once they've convinced that all these folks have got a little money, we're going to get rid of all those poor folks. We're going to redo this public housing and make it look like something for those poor folks that you know are not going to be returning. You do understand it when they say they're going to redo housing for poor folks, that poor folks are not returning. I mean, right. North Beach, right up here in Valencia, Sunnydale itself spent thousands and thousands of dollars, and all they did was one little duplex of housing to show everybody how it was going to look. They overspent by zillions of dollars, and those are still the only little units that got the remodeling. They were testing it out to see how much interference, how much complaining was going to happen. Even in Sunnydale right now, if you notice, when you go to the top of the hill, the golf course has now moved in, encroached upon where the public housing used to be. And they're not replacing those houses. As a matter of fact, the golf course is wanting to expand and put a little restaurant and stuff up there. Do you honestly believe that they're doing it for the folks who live in public housing? I just want to know, because anybody who does, oh, please. But if you think that all of those changes, the light rail. You think about the light rail, and I remember hearing the argument, well, this light rail is going to lie, and the reason we're not going to put it underground, we're going to bring it up on top, was because people are going to be able to come from downtown all the way through Bayview, and they're going to see that there's real people there. Well, what real people were you planning on seeing when redevelopment started with the sheriff's department with planning? And we have a very poor planning department. I got to tell you, we have got to take aim at planning and go after them with both feet. We cannot allow planning to continue to disregard people's sanctity of their homes and their businesses. We just cannot allow it anymore. But think about bringing that light rail in, and half the folks in Bayview are not working. So where are they going to ride to? They don't have the money to go downtown and shop. We don't have any business in the financial. Honey, do you have a reason to go into the financial district, seeing as though you're not working down there? And if you go down there and you don't look the part, you're going to be chased out of there, because they're going to want to know what you're doing. So I'm saying, wait a minute. This light rail is not being put here for us. And as far as folks from on the opposite end coming into Bayview to see that we're real folks and have real jobs, wait a minute. We're not working. And they're shutting down all the small businesses. So how is that going to benefit Bayview? How is that going to benefit Visitation Valley? Those folks are not going there. For students going to San Francisco City College, I mean, okay, well, you can get on the light rail and go all the way out to City College. That's a good deal. But if our folks are not working, which means you can't afford to even send your child through junior college, because if he doesn't have straight A or at least the 3.0 average, he's not going to qualify for a grant. So who are you taking to school?
That's right.
I mean, truly, who are you taking to school? I had the displeasure of asking folks a couple of weeks ago who were complaining about not knowing anybody in the community anymore. I said, well, you know, for the past 10 years, I've been telling you that your neighbors are not the same folks. I'm not saying don't welcome new folks. That's not what I'm saying. And it's always been turned around to be negative. My problem is not being negative. It's letting people know that these are not our neighbors. And by the way, most of them are not San Franciscans. These are not coming from the Mission over to Bayview. They're not, Bayview not going into the Mission and living. They're not going down to North Beach and living. You know, they're not going out to the Mission. And those folks out at the upper end of Mission, they're not coming into Bayview to live either. So who are these folks? These are brand new people. We are being done exactly what redevelopment said they were going to do. They are at the end of their redos, what all the things that they list that they do, right before the last thing that says redo, they say repeople. Now, what do you think repeople mean?
Marie, I'm wondering, you know, we remember how Willie Brown got elected.
Oh,
because
yeah.
90% of us poor folks of color voted for Willie Brown, mostly black folks. In the meantime, what we see now is a lot of demoralization, a lot of fragmentation. We see a lot of people with double agendas. What do you make of the lack of unity that we suffer from in Bayview in terms of moral agendas and the folks in government and the folks on the street?
To be absolutely honest with you, Misha, it is a illness. when we elected Willie, there was a time in 1998 and late 97 when Willie Brown decided he was going to run for mayor, that he created this wave. He had poor people and people of color thinking, I'm a man of color, I understand where you're coming from, and I'm not afraid to knock on this door and open it up and let us in.
Did you
to the process.
In him at the time?
Actually, I did. Mm-hmm. I really did. I caught that wave and would have ridden that wave all the way to the White House if necessary. But unfortunately for me, I'm very nosy. Okay, I have to say that honestly. I'm extremely nosy.
You, Marie?
Extremely nosy. So I watch people, and I'm a people person, so I'm watching people. It's not so much of what you say, but your body language that I see first, and I recognize, and I read body language pretty doggone well. And after his first 6 months, and I gave him a D+, everybody got to ask him, what are you doing? I said, I'm grading y'all's mayor. And I got told, well, what do you mean? The first time this city's ever had a black mayor, daughter, I said, and this actually should have been a wonderful thing. However, by the end of his second year, he went from a D+ to an F. And they're asking me, well, how can you do that? This man is doing all he can. I said, but who is he doing it for? Do you realize that in the first 4 years that he actually was our mayor, that there were contractors who lived and actually had bits and pieces of work that keep their families and keep their employees going? And they were black folks. They were people of color. Do you realize that in his first 4 years that in the black community, almost every black contractor lost their license because they couldn't continue to work mm-hmm. because they weren't getting the jobs. They were getting pushed aside. They were being used through HRC to get big contracts and then shoved out the door. I remember sitting at the table with this man when this contractor said to him, Mr. Mayor, said, I'm not going for this. I have a family to raise. And these folks really threatened me. He said, well, how did they threaten you? He said, he offered me $10,000 for a $270,000 job and told me, we don't need you anymore, but I'm going to give you $10,000 because we did use your name to get it, and you need to leave it. And if you don't leave now, he said, no, we're coming out there on the airport and we're going to do the job. Well, he said, Mr. Mayor, this man told me he knew where my son went to school at. And I'm looking, I'm listening, I'm horrified now because, I don't know, did you hear the threat in that? Mm-hmm. You know, you got $10,000, take it or leave it, but get out of town. And if you don't, by the way, I know where your son go to school at. If you don't hear the threat in that, then there's something wrong with your hearing, or maybe I'm so skeptical I pick up on all these things. But like I say, I read body language real well. This was a grown man who was in tears. And the response was, well, maybe they sharpened their pencil and saw where they could do it a little cheaper.
I understand that Willie Ratcliffe, the publisher of the San Francisco Bayview newspaper, originally had the airport contract, and it was swept from under his feet and given to a white contractor in spite of Equal Opportunity Council.
In spite of the equal opportunity, when he forced his way in out there to do, they lowered the amount of work that he was supposed to do because he was a big mouth and was going to keep up the complaining. And I had actually said, you know, you're hiding stuff, and when you hide it, I'll find it. If I find it, I will tell everybody. That's my motto from this point on. If you hide it, I'll find it. And if I find it, I'm going to tell everybody. I'm going to go up and down the streets ringing a bell. This is what they're doing. Somebody is going to hear it. Somebody is going to believe it, or somebody's going to check it out. They got nooses hung. When we went to the RHRC, I was so angry I couldn't even cry when they decided that this man was just talking. Someone hangs a noose in your trailer and tell you if you keep on complaining, you know what's next. They say you don't do good.
They drop the ball. We don't even hear about the noose.
Anymore. Oh, hell no, not at all. And then they say things like you don't do good work, yet the Ratcliffs had to go back. Liberty Builders had to go back and redo work that they didn't even do because your folks did it wrong and it didn't pass the inspection. So now you got a black crew out there to do it right, and you're telling them they don't do good work, they're costing you money. Well, no, the person you sent out there to do the job that they were supposed to be doing in the beginning. And the funny thing is that one of the contractors said to, I remember him saying to Johnny, who was Willie's foreman, said, "You want to know?" He said, they're arguing, "We didn't do this, we didn't do this." So the man said, "All you got to do, if you don't keep on fussing, is look at who ordered the cement. Mm-hmm. Look at who signed it off. You check your records. You know when you were out here. We can't lie because it's signed off. We know who we delivered it to. And by the way, sir, no, we didn't deliver it to you." But would he come to the HRC and say that? No, because he didn't want his business harmed.
You mean the Human Rights Commission?
Hey, it's this city has become not even silently. They're not even silent about it. They don't even try to hide it anymore. This city has become one of the most racist cities throughout the entire
and
United
supposedly
States.
Supposedly the most liberal we are city supposed in the world,
to be the
right?
Most, we are supposed to be the most liberal and the most progressive. We have people throughout the United States looking at San Francisco, and things that they have noted that will work here will work every place else. And would you believe the kind of record that we are setting here in San Francisco right now is so disgraceful. I believe that if God was to walk across the world today and really take a few minutes to stop, and the reason he doesn't is because they said, "Boy, I'm going to have to treat y'all like Solomon and Gomorrah. I'm just going to get rid of all of y'all and start all over again." Because, you know, you got it. I remember the prayer that the one good-hearted man said, "Say if but for 10 good people." Okay, well, the angel of death said no. "Well, what about 5? He said no. He said, "Well, what if I can find 3? Three good people." The angel of death looked around and through the eyes of God could tell. He says, "You're not going to make that one either." So he said, "But for one, just give me enough. If I can find one, would you save this place?" Upon reaching that one good-hearted man, which happened to be him, and he didn't even realize it, do you know, the angel said, "I'm giving you and your family enough time to get out of Dodge." That's Willie Brown's words, because he told us if we didn't make up to anywhere from $90,000 to $100,000 one night at a meeting at the mosque, then we should get out of Dodge City. Mm. San Francisco was Dodge City. Y'all will come in here at dawn and go to work, but come dusk at 6 o'clock, you need to get out of Dodge City.
I understand that.
You know what that sounds like? Yeah. I mean, I think about that sometimes. Oh, God. Did he really say that?
We're talking about mafia methodology. We've seen what it's about.
People laughed at that and they thought, and then I wish that you could have been there. You have to visualize a room full of people when he said that, and he kind of cackled a little bit. Everybody just kind of, huh?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they got that look on their face. Is he serious? Because he caught me off guard, too. I'm sorry.
I was told that Willie Brown owns 6% of the shares on the Chronicle.
Yes.
Do you think that he has a long arm and is still pulling the strings from Sacramento?
Sacramento, honey, he's here every morning doing the Will and Willie show. And if you think that Willie Brown, with the kind of, see, people mistake him as they think he's just an old man who has done his thing and gone on his way. Please don't misunderstand this man. This man was a criminal attorney, and he was at the peak of his game when he decided he wanted to go political.
Right.
He is nobody's dummy. You cannot go at this man as if he's an old man and don't know what he's doing. Because if you do, you'll get slapped down every time. Give credit where credit is due. This man is sharp as a tack,
mm-hmm.
especially when it comes to politics. He told me once that the reason, he said, actually, you know what? Called me baby girl. The reason you're not going to make it, baby girl, is because you won't listen. I go, God, what does that mean?
You don't want to join the Sambos?
Oh, please. You know, I would not disrespect my family for that. You know, I could trace my family back to the plantation that they worked on. In New Orleans and Louisiana, so you know that would be disrespectful to them, and I could not disrespect them.
You're not
going to
serve
no
the master, right?
Not even. Go fight that one every step of the way, and I think everybody has the right to fight that.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that I'm any better than anybody, and doesn't mean that I'm any worse than anybody. I've learned through my lifetime to see things and see people the way they are as people. I don't draw lines because lines are invisible and can be erased easily. I don't see color. And I don't see color because, for a lot of reasons, I don't see color because one of the main reasons I don't see color is because if you follow my family line back to the beginning of their being brought here to the United
mm-hmm.
States,
mm-hmm.
what you're going to find is after that first little person stepped off of that boat, that line started to be filtered immediately. Right now, my oldest sister, if you were to look at her, you would have a hard time believing that she was black. But she is, you know, and it so you can't have that kind of a a mixture of color in your family line and stand around and say, oh, you black, you white, you red, you brown, you this. Because my family isn't all of them, okay? What we kind of peek them all a little bit.
What about the dynamic, the compounding dynamic of poverty and race and class?
You know, it's amazing that in today's date, this is the 21st century. Do you know how much time has been expanded since then? And still, classism reigns supreme. Racism is still alive and kicking. And economics is more than just a word now. It's a reality, and people need to understand that. This whole deal about has and has not is alive and kicking, and every day they move a little closer to the finish line, which means our demise, because we refuse to recognize that. There are people right here in San Francisco that I talk to on a daily basis that are as racist as they are what they are, and would never, ever admit to it because it's a sin and it's a shame. But don't get me wrong. A lot of those racist people that I know happen to be black, and they don't recognize it. It has been one of those, you know, those quasi words that are, oh, we don't use that word around here. We don't use that word around. You hear that so much. The problem is that you need to use that word because you're not going to recognize the demon when the demon comes out because you're hiding him. I don't lie to my children. You know how people used to tell their children, it's funny, you know, the devil has horns and a big old tail and he's this horrible. I said, do you guys realize that Satan was one of the most favorite children of God? Mm-hmm. He made man in his own image. Would he attach a tail to himself and long horns and ears? Absolutely not. So we need to tell the truth about this. That demon is within. It is.
Keep going.
Okay, so that demon is within. That demon is not. And we stop. We forget to do that. We forget to tell our children the truth. So how do you think they get so caught up? Because we try to sweeten the pot for them.
Since we're on the topic of race and class right now, there is this hot controversy all over the country right now with some so-called leaders such as Joseph Blue and Charlie Walker in our city exhorting blacks to denounce illegal immigration as the very source of the demise of black people, saying that Mexicans are robbing the jobs from blacks. Well, where do you stand around all those issues? What about black and brown unity? Where do you stand?
Oh, my God. Misha, first of all, if we're going to talk about unity, we need to tell the truth. We need to go back and try to retrace our steps. And, you know, so first of all, before we start claiming something, we better go back and make the Indians that they moved out of there. We better go back and grab those folks and say, you know what, we're going to take them trinkets back and give you back your land, first of all, okay? And if memory serves me correctly, and I wasn't that good in history, but God dog it, wasn't brown and even browner folks here before us?
Sitting on Mexican,
you know,
no,
I kind of
no,
thought they was like, in, you know what I talk about, that invisible line? So, there was a time when there wasn't a line, even invisible, that they could walk across and do whatever they needed to do. And all of a sudden, here come America, and we're drawing lines. We're telling folks where they can go and where they can come. But people, even bigger than that, people have, honest to God, forgotten who started America. Who started America? There is no such thing as a true American if you really want to know the God's almighty truth, because they came from Europe. Everybody here, if they really sit down, excepting for the younger folks who probably can't go back that far in tracing their history, they will find that all of those non-folks of color who didn't come from Asia or what have you came from Europe. This was not their land. This didn't belong to them. They took it. And I believe, you know, if we're going to make it right, we need to make it all the way right. I'm sorry. I don't recall my mother or my grandmother or my great-grandmother ever telling me that their parent actually walked on that ship, tied themselves up, you know, went for days without water and food, urinating on themselves and all those other good stuff because they wanted to be in America. You know, we wanted to come here and we, you know, believe it or not, Malcolm X said once, I believe it was Malcolm X, that, we didn't land on Plymouth Rock, honey. Plymouth Rock landed on us.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that Mexican folks, Latin, however they choose to describe themselves, think that they drew that border, okay? I know they didn't build it. I think that border landed on them. And they walked into an invisible wall and started wondering, what the hell is this? Excuse me. Forgive that one.
You're listening to Mary Harrison, our local and global sister from Green Action, running for supervisor for District 10 in San Francisco. And you know that Marie's going to win. She got all the right people on her side. And in a little while, she's going to tell us more about her platform and also why she's the co-chair of the Southeast Sector of the African American Community Policing Relations Board in San Francisco. But right now, we have another person on the air, Christine Alves from Alcatraz Communication. How are you doing, Christine?
I'm doing well, thank you.
So what you got for us today?
Well, I wanted to share that a group of people from San Francisco are planning a commemoration ceremony next Friday afternoon on June 9th, downtown in the Tenderloin. I'm with Community Housing Partnership.
Okay.
And we own and manage a property called the Senator Hotel, which houses formerly homeless individuals.
I'm very familiar with it. I used to be the program director for Shanti.
Oh,
and
wonderful.
And we had a lot of our clients with HIV who were housed at the Senator.
Oh, wonderful. Well, what we just discovered as the staff here is that 35 years ago, when I heard you just recently speaking about the Native American people, the Indian people, 35 years ago, the last Indians were evicted from Alcatraz Island after holding the rock for almost two years.
After most of them died of tuberculosis on the island in very suspicious circumstances, actually.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Well, when the Indians took over in 1969,
right,
and took the rock and held it for a year and a half, you know, the federal government was not about to deal with it, so they circled the island and tried to keep people out, but pirates were able to land. Indians got on the land using little boats, got back on the island, and they held it for a year and a half.
That's right.
And the last of the group to be there was evicted from the island. There were 14 of them left on June 11th, 1971.
Right.
And when the federal marshals kicked them off the island, they gave them one night stay at the Senator Hotel. And we just discovered this recently. And the staff has been working with Indian folks from the Friendship House in San Francisco.
Okay, yes.
That's the Intertribal
program,
Treaty Council.
Right.
And some people from up north in Laytonville, Rancheria, California.
Right.
To create an event next Friday afternoon to commemorate, both to remember and to continue resistance to the kind of oppression
awesome.
That many people face.
Did you ever go to the Thanksgiving event in Oakland?
Yes, those are wonderful. Yes.
That's right.
And we've actually invited some drummers to come, and they're going to have a drum circle on Ellis Street. It's 519 Ellis Street, and the drummers will be there, and I understand some children are coming to share their dances with
Wonderful.
Us, and the elders are coming. Some people who were occupiers on the island are going to be there, others who were supporters, and it's going to be a wonderful event. There'll be food and a blessing, and folks are going to be invited to speak out on what
Beautiful.
That event was meant to them.
Beautiful. So that's Alcatraz Commemoration
Community
of June 9th,
Housing Partnership, together with occupiers of Alcatraz Island.
At the Senator Hotel at 519 Ellis Street.
Yes,
from
Friday,
3
June
to
9th,
6 p.m.
From
3
to 6 p.m.
Excellent. Can we have a contact number for you, Christine, if people want to talk to you?
Sure. The number is 415-749-2790.
And this is Christine Alves. Can you say that number again, please?
415-749-2790.
Wonderful. Power to black and brown people.
All right. See you Friday.
Thanks, Christine.
Okay, bye-bye.
Now, I just mentioned that Marie Harrison is the co-chair of the African American Community Policing Board in Bayview, Potro Hill, Sunnydale, and Visitation Valley, the Southeast Sector. Can you tell us what prompted you to join this board?
Well, a whole lot. A lot of it's personal. I feel an obligation to my community.
And by the way, when I talk about my community, I mean all of this city, because I've worked, lived, and played throughout this entire city. I take ownership. And that's one of the problems that we fail to do, is we fail to take ownership. So I take ownership to this city. This city belongs to me. And the great need, a lot of folks don't, who live in, say, the more echelon areas of San Francisco, they don't feel the pressure that folks feel who don't have the attorney that they can call if you stop them too many times. They don't go to Knob Hill and pull you over and snatch you out of your car and rough you up and then go, oh, doggone it, you're not the right somebody, you know. They don't drive by after there's a shooting in other communities and disrespect women who are standing there trying to figure out, man, was it my child? Was it yours? Who, you know, who's who? They don't do that in other communities. And I remember back when we battled the police commission over the Aaron Williams case, and one of the things that was the most heartbreaking
to
me.
That was what, 15 years, 12 years
12
ago?
12 years ago. Yeah. One of the things that was the most heartbreaking to me is out of that, the police were to be trained properly on how to deal with, not just with people of color, but with communities who were not as well off. And they try to find a nice way to say it, but when you go into a community where there's a lot of poor folks or a lot of people of color, you need to learn how they feel and how to address them as culturally competent as you can, and with a little sense and a common sense, should I say, and a little kindness, because you can get more. I mean, truly, the old saying about getting more flies with honey than vinegar and salt, it works every time, you know. But our police department truly has run amok on more than one occasion. I mean, true, there's a lot of violence in this city. And it's not just in our southeast sector, it's all over this city. And there's a reason for it. And when you have such a large amount of police around, there has to be a reason it's not squashing itself, okay? You know? There's
got to
be something else. I call it that third hand moving in the back, you know, where you put your both hands out and then somebody else is in the back moving you around like little chess pieces. We're being manipulated and being moved around.
What do you mean when you say community policing? What does that mean?
That means that community folks need to start looking out for themselves. They need to be doing more than sitting around having coffee and talking about what they saw. They need to start reporting it, documenting it. They need to be watching out for their own children. They need to be watching out for individuals who come into their community. They need to be policing. They need to be doing the job that we're looking for the police to do that they're not doing. Because one, you know your community. You've circulated yourself around that community, so you know mostly all of the kids. We're not saying that they're all going to say, oh, yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, when we say, hey, you know what you're doing is wrong. There was a time and a place, and that actually happened. So we got to bring that back in. But it's going to take mamas and daddies and sisters and brothers and preachers and teachers, and if I missed anybody, and even police. But we want police.
We need to teach them community policing.
We need to teach that to our children, because our children are out there more than we are. We are their safety net, and we fail to secure them. And to sit back and think that the police department is going to secure them is wrong. And it was wrong on our behalf to even allow that myth to get carried as far as it's gone, because truly we would not, I believe, not have them as many problems as we have if we've been on our guard and watching them every step of the way like we should have been. Do you think they would do the kind of stuff that they do in Bayview, in Knob Hill, or at North Beach? I don't even have any money, and I bet you that one.
Marie, yesterday you came to a Silence the Violence vigil that was organized in Bayview as well as in Oakland and about every district in San Francisco, a collaboration between Alabaca Center for Human Rights and Rudy Corpus, the director of United Players. And I understand that you were at the vigil in Bayview.
Yes,
how did
indeed.
That go?
Actually, it went quite well. I was very surprised that so many young folks showed up, because I had gone up on the hill to bring down some folks, and at the last minute they were saying, no, these guys are saying that there's something going on. It's not as quiet around here. They were afraid, and I'm thinking, this is my community. These are our children.
Turf, right?
We're talking about turf things.
Corner,
and I'm thinking, yeah, and we're talking about stuff that, wait a minute, these are your kids. You're telling me that if everybody from Kiska and from Harbor and from Hunter's View and from Hudson, if we showed up there, that your kids are going to run by there and shoot at you? How you think we're going to stop this stuff? So that visual was just a beginning. It was a bringing out. It was a time for making peace with ourselves and accepting the responsibility for what's going on in our community by saying we are responsible and we must take the responsibility for it. And this is our start. This is where we start, right here at home.
And actually, there's something very exciting happening in San Francisco right now, is that it's a youth-led movement that is called The Truth. The big summer truth in San Francisco. We have awesome folks in our community policing branch in the Southeast, such as Sabrina Davidson, a young youth activist, Cassandra James,
yes,
who is a youth commissioner for District 10, and they're saying, we want to be safe, kids want to be safe. And this movement is rapidly spreading all across the city. We understand that 2 weeks ago already, Harbor Mob, an Oakdale mob called the Truth.
Yes, and that's a wonderful thing. That's when you know that you haven't lost everybody. And that's when you know that, you mean to tell me all we had to do was get some folks out there and people would start talking. We forget to talk to each other, but our young folks speak a different language. And so I think that part of our deal is that we need to learn to speak their language versus them learning to speak ours. Because remember, the job of training falls upon your shoulders as mothers, fathers, and older sisters and brothers and mothers' friends and fathers' friends and that kind of thing, you know. We need to go back to that. We lost a whole lot moving forward. Technology grew, but our minds got smaller. And so we need to come back and regain that. But we have some, they never cease to amaze me. We have some young folks that are working with the Southeast Sector Policing. Man, these guys are so energetic. Their minds are so big. Oh, it's exciting watching them work because their hearts are in it. You can't help but catch that. Now, that's the wave you want to catch. That's the wave. You want to catch a wave, that's it.
They're young in age, but none is saying much.
Oh, baby, you would be so... I cannot tell you how proud it makes me feel. By the way, these are two young ladies who are brave
and 18.
These guys are brave in it all. And they're putting it out there on the line, and they're saying, you know what, this is our community. We were raised here. We live here. We want to see. And these are our friends that are dying. We want to stop this. And they're out there talking, and they're talking to everybody. They're bringing them in little by little. just talking about it. It's exciting to see it happening. But, ooh, we. God, what can I say? You got to. I invite everybody. When you see these young ladies coming down the street and they're talking to young folks, send your sons and daughters out to talk to them. Let them know that they need to come on and get on board. And by the way, if you happen to live in the Southeast Sector, let me say that we're accepting all young folks.
And there's send them all. OGs out there to watch your back.
Oh, please. Not only that, but some of those OGs, as you call them, need to get up off their lazies and start accepting the fact that these are our children. They're not your children or my children. These are our children. This is our city. We need to start, what I say, ownership. I own this city. This city belongs to me. And until we start feeling like this city belongs to us, we're going to continue to lose ground. We need to start claiming ownership. So, and we need to not even try to erase these invisible lines because they're invisible. So I go every place in this city I want to go. And I refuse to be held back. And I want these kids to see people out there that are black, white, blue, green, yellow, orange, green. I don't care. We got a rainbow for a city of folks and of all different religions, all different creeds. Man, you guys have got to come out of your houses, get out of them cars, and start letting these kids know, guess what, when you're doing right, I'm right there with you. When you're doing wrong, I'm going to say, hey, you need to stop.
It means we must have the courage to empower the kids.
Oh.
I've heard some old people, well, people my age, say, oh, no, you don't want to give the power to those kids. You know, that's the crack generation.
Oh,
their moms
no.
are on crack. They're crazy. Hello, remember, if you were born in Bayview 50 years ago, you were breathing radium from Nagasaki and Hiroshima bomb experiments that were right there on the shipyard. You were breathing cadmium. Phosphorus, your brain is probably just as crazed as your babies. It's time to give out the power.
Please, you know, I've got to give a little short history here. You know, over a decade and a half, the things we know now, we did not know. And those things were allowed to grow. One of the very first jobs I ever had was working in that shipyard. One of the first times I ever stopped and took a look at what was happening to the city and to the communities was when that shipyard closed. And keep in mind that the Southeast sector had the largest home ownership. I mean, people actually bought homes. They actually owned them. These are folks who came out of the South to work in that shipyard. When the Navy got their orders to shut down business, they transferred military families out that were being taken care of. But all those civilians folks that were there, they didn't retrain them. They didn't take them with them. And they all of a sudden said, see you later. And these folks are buying homes for themselves. They're buying homes for their older daughters and sons to help get them started. And all of a sudden, there's no money. You had fathers and sons competing for the same jobs. You had mothers and daughters competing for the same jobs. Then there was no jobs at all. You had daddies being told by Mr. Welfare, well, you lazy and trifling because you ain't working, so you don't need to be there. So, Mama, if you want to get this welfare check, you need to put him out in the street somewhere. Mm-hmm. Well, who decides? We have housing authority folks back in the days, and still do try to do that now. Tell mothers that when your son or your daughter is 18 years old, they need to have their own space. How they gonna have their own space? They ain't got no job. How do you do that?
That is managed mayhem. That's actually part of ethnic.
Oh, please! And it is so out there. It's so obvious and it's so visible. They're not even trying to hide it. But we're closing our minds off saying, no, we're too progressive for that. We're too this, we're too that. We need to stop talking about what we're not and start looking at what we really are. We are dumb because we allow somebody else's mentality to control what is going on in our lives. We need to stop that.
I understand that on Sunday there's going to be a civil rights revival cookout on 3rd and Peru.
Oh, most definitely.
Are you going to be there, Marie?
Oh, most definitely.
Are we talking about coalition building?
Yes, we are.
And I understand you're going to be there. Omar Khalif and Kim Shim Office, who are running for Board of Supervisors, are going to be there.
Yes.
Booker T. Neal from the Department of Justice, Ross Mercurini, Jeanette Raley.
All right.
And so we're going to have fun.
You got quite a lineup coming, so I'm hoping everybody's going to at least come by and stop in. Because that should be, outside of the fun, it'll give you an opportunity to shake hands and meet some real folks who are really trying. And that's what we need.
The address is 4921 3rd Street. That's 4921 3rd Street at the corner of 3rd and Peru on Sunday at 4. Bang for Change, the Civil Rights Revival Festival and Cookout.
All right.
We don't say barbecue. I don't know. Do you know where barbecue comes from?
I do, but maybe you ought to enlighten folks.
Barbecue comes from the French de la barbe à la queue, from beard to tail, when in actually Alabama, they used to skew live slaves on a stick and roast them on an open fire in front of the plantation when they try to run for freedom. So every time that we say barbecue, we refer to that, barbecuing a black slave. And also, a lot of people don't know what picnic is. Picnic comes from the slave auctions also in Louisiana, and it means pick your nigger at the slave auction. So, you know, a lot of people don't know, so they doesn't face them, but those who do get very hurt and very offended. And that's why we talk about food fest and cookout, for lack of better words.
Well, I got to be absolutely honest with you. I was actually grown with a family of my own before I actually got the true definition of those words.
Mm-hmm.
Really and truly, because it wasn't taught in school. You know, right now, I would wager you not even the most liberal of liberal teachers would actually sit there and tell a classroom of folks, especially folks of color, how to define those words.
There are so many hidden messages still, and a lot of us don't know. Like, you know that famous lullaby, Rock-a-Bye Baby and the Cradle of Fall? It's actually about black infant genocide.
People just don't know. Yeah. Part of the thing that I really like, and I'm going to throw a plug in there for Misha, is she does her homework, and I'm constantly telling folks, do your homework.
Yes.
Well, she does her homework, and she's a storehouse full of information. So you need to call and check her out.
You must come, man.
And come by and see her. And then you must take that information and pass it on, because I'm a firm believer in information. I think information is only as good as the next person you pass it on. So this is a lesson here, folks. You just got taught a little bit of history. So you need to store that in your memory banks and then pass it on. Don't store it and keep it. You got to pass it on.
And I'm learning so much from you, Marie, and I'm so immensely proud of you and for you.
Oh,
why don't you tell us a little bit? What is it that is new and real that you will bring to Bayview? What is your platform in Bayview in District 10 for this supervisor candidate upcoming position?
Let me say that what is real is I am a real person.
Mm-hmm.
I don't play. I don't put on airs. This is what you see is what you get. I am a fighter. When I say that I will fight for your rights, I mean that win, lose, or draw, I will be fighting for your rights. There will be no more lockout. Not in Bayview, not in Petrel Hill, not in Visitation Valley, not in Little Hollywood, not in Sunnydale. There'll be no more lockouts. When there is gang violence on our street, I'm going to be there with you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be there because I need to walk those streets. And I'm not going to tell you that I live right up the street. I want you to come up the street and get me if you know that there's something going on, because that's what a supervisor is supposed to be. I'm not going to tell you that I'm going to have an open door policy where you can come in and sit down. I'm going to come to you if it's necessary. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to wait for you to come down into me. But this is a joint effort. I want people to know what it feels like to become part of something, of a movement. I want people to catch that wave, because our unemployment rates are too high. Our kids, our young folks are hanging out on street corners. Well, every now and then we need to run out there and grab one of these kids and put our arms around them and say, you know what, honey? I feel like your mind's if you ain't, and I'm going to walk you back off this corner. And every time I see you out here, I'm going to walk you back off this corner. I'm going to walk you off this corner until you get so tired of me. You're going to start asking, say, okay, well, what can I do? And when I tell you that I'm going to get you trained, if you don't have the training, that we're going to go find your job, you're going to get that job. I am so sick and tired of people telling our young folks, get this training, get this training. You take their name and social security number. Oh, please. You know, Willie Radcliffe taught me something when I worked with him on the construction job. And no, I don't like getting dirty, and no, I don't build houses and all those stuff. I do a little negotiating here and there, and I'm the one who sits back and works it out when there's an argument. I'm that person, because I think I'm a pretty good people person, to pat myself on the back here. But right. One of the things that he learned me is that the best training program in the world is one that sticks you out there on the job and pays you a decent wage and tells you, now dig a ditch there and grab that shovel. How much training does it take to grab a shovel and dig a ditch? How much training does it take to show, especially a young man or a young woman, how to drive a car, because you know they want to drive a vehicle anyway. Drive some of that heavy equipment around. And it don't take all that kind of training. And at the time that these guys are out there working their behinds off, they're getting taught, they're getting tired, and they're making money. Who's got time to hang out here on this corner? When we send our young folks to school, I want them to learn reading, writing, and arithmetic, and I want them to learn something that they can take from that school out there and get them a job with. Not in Bayview, Hunters Point, but any place in this city, and any place in this state, any place in the United States. They should be able to take that education and go with it and make it work for them. And we are not doing that for them now. We need to do that. As a supervisor, I will be not just assigning somebody to look at those kind of things and work on those kind of things. I will be out there actively going after those kind of things. I'm going to be the one that's going to talk to Bank of America and Wells Fargo and U.S. Bank and all those folks. If you're in the community, you need to do the community reinvestment.
Are they going to give us some loans finally?
If I'm there, they are. Guess what? We're not going to do business with you. Not my community, and by the time I'm through, not anybody's community, because you know what? While being a supervisor for District 10 means I have to look out for those folks, this is not a reality. The reality is that a supervisor for District 10 has to look out for this entire city. I don't have a problem with sitting down in anybody's community with anybody's supervisor. And please believe me, I've done it before. I will with the rest of them. And we're going to work on this. We're going to make it work for San Francisco. Why are they not doing the Reinvestment Act? If they're not doing it in Bayview, are they doing it in Mission? If they're not, why not? Mm-hmm. We're not doing business with them anymore. You need to stop doing business with them. When you hit them in their pockets where it hurts, please believe me,
that's right,
they're going to reverse that.
That's
and
right.
I wholeheartedly believe in that. I thought that with this last go-around, the first go-around, when district elections, when we got all these folks in, I really believed that they were going to follow the guidelines. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of this is not new. A lot of this is what we thought was going to happen when we voted all these progressive, right. what we want to call progressive folks in. And I have to be honest with you, there's only at right now there's only two.
For Sophie?
I actually helped put her in office because I loved her mother.
Enola Maxwell.
I loved her mother. Her mother was a fighter. And a lot of folks voted for Sophie because they loved her mother. And I thought, okay, well, she's got to have some of that in her. This is not a personal affront to Sophie. Sophie does business in her way. I will do business in my way.
That's right.
I think that I'm just a little bit stronger on it. And I think this is what San Francisco needs right now.
Since
we need a change and we need a little bit stronger person.
Since we are on the topic of critical business to take care of right now, what is your vision around toxicity and pollution in the shipyard and in Bayview in general? I understand that 47% of kids born with birth defects are actually Bayview folks.
Well, you know, one of the things I had alluded to a little earlier was that when I worked at the shipyard, I won't tell you how many years ago that was. I'll just tell the audience that I'm a mother and a grandmother.
You're only 29.
Like I said, I'm a mother and a grandmother. That should put you in the right vicinity, okay, of age. And I worked out at the shipyard. One of the things I discovered was that our community has so much stuff that surrounds it that we didn't even know about.
Right.
We knew that they were there, but we didn't know the serious severity of them. You know, when I worked out at the shipyard, they used to have these plastic sheets that would blow in and out, and all this little stuff used to get all over our clothes and all in our hair. Did you know it was asbestos? Did you know that asbestos is one of the leading causes of cancer? There is such
an emphysema.
And it's called asbestosis. Do you know that people died from that? Yeah. But do you know that they knew about that 30 years before I went to work?
We're almost talking about Tuskegee in San Francisco.
We're talking about that. It just got a new name.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying is that stuff like that was kept a secret because somebody else made the decision on what we should know. Did you know that in Bayview Hunters Point right now, the four single largest sources of air, land, and water pollution are within walking distance from each other?
Mm.
Did you know that's identified by the EPA? Those guys are charged with saving and protecting the earth and the people who live around it. They're not doing their jobs, I'm trying to tell you. Do you know that along that line that there are 186 underground leaking storage tanks that have been identified by the EPA and the water board because a lot of that is leaching into the bay? So does it surprise you when I tell you it took me 7 years of battling with these guys to get them to put up a sign that says that eating fish from our bay is dangerous?
That's right. Actually, it's stored, the toxic are stored in the fat liver cells of the fish. Any fish longer than 12 inches is highly cancerous. And actually, there is on those signs that you're responsible for a warning that say do not eat it more than once a month.
And if
you must eat it, call the Poison Control Center for a recipe.
Now, you know, I'm going to laugh because I'm still going to say, what's wrong with saying don't eat the fish? If they just will not say, don't eat any fish from the bay.
Some folks are poor and they're going to go fish.
You know, I remember going after the Navy because, you know, the Navy has all kind of things that are leaching into the groundwater. And that groundwater runs off the edge of the bay into the bay.
Right.
And one of the things that a commander actually said to me at a meeting at the Southeast Campus on Evans Street once, we were in this heated argument over what was going into the water. How much did they know about what was going in the water?
Mm-hmm.
And, well, you're not an engineer and you're not a scientist. I said, no, but I deal in common sense and logic.
I breathe
you know?
It and I drink it every
day.
Hey,
and he made me so angry. And we were sitting there. Everybody was just going at it. I said, you know what? Let me make my point. He was drinking a cup of coffee. Now, I was drinking a cup of coffee and he had a glass of water. So when he got the water down to a little less than half full. I walked over and poured my coffee. He told me, well, Miss Hashem, do you understand that we own 100 yards of that water? And I said, no. Well, I can't tell you what I said. That wouldn't be nice on the air. But no kidding. That's a nicer word. And sure, and no. So what you're going to tell me is when the tide rolls in, it gets up to that 100-yard mark and go, and that invisible 100-yard mark and then go, doggone it, that belongs to the Navy. I can't even roll over there, you know. And our fish are so doggone smart. They get up to that line and they go,
oh, no.
You know, that's contaminated over there. And you know we can't swim over there. Y'all, we need to turn around because, you know, it's a school of fish. So, you know, we need to turn around and go back the other way. And he looked at me and just really growled at me. And I said, you know, I tell you what, you're right. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a doctor. I'm none of these things. Matter of fact, I'm a mother, and I'm a very angry mother at this particular point, so I'm a little emotional, so I'm going to prove my point to you. I poured my coffee into this water. I said, now, I own that coffee. Do you mind telling my coffee to separate itself from your water and get back in my cup, because my coffee is contaminating your water? He looked at me. He stood up. He straightened his uniform out, put his hat under his arm, and walked to the door and said, every time I come here, you try to embarrass me. I said, I can't do that. Remember, I'm not a scientist. I'm not a lawyer. Right. I'm not a doctor. Right. The matter of fact, I'm not even an engineer. How can I embarrass you? But could you answer my question before you leave? And could I get my coffee back? He walked out the door and everybody just roared. And I said, you know what's really wrong with this picture? He said, you guys are laughing because you thought I was being funny. I was definitely serious. Mm-hmm. I was definitely serious because this man had the audacity to tell me that I didn't have enough sense to know that when the tide rolled in, everything that it stirred up was going to stay where it was. Okay.
And we are so jaded to fear and corruption that sometimes we don't cry and we don't rage anymore. We just laugh. Now, let me open a whole different bag of worms. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a bit about development and the referendum?
Oh, my Lord. My sore spot, huh? Development. Ugh, where you want to start with development? Let me go to the source of my illness here.
Okay.
Let's talk about the shipyard and Parcel A where the Lennar Corporation is building it. And you'll understand through my answer why it's my source of illness. First of all, Parcel A was not totally clean. Could not possibly have been totally clean.
There's still radioactivity on Parcel A.
But just think about all of the stuff that's surrounding it,
right.
And they're still working on it, which means moving dirt around. And do you honestly think that the dirt blew in opposite direction? It blew all around Parcel A, but didn't go on Parcel A.
Was there a fire on Parcel A for
Actually, the fire was right below it on Parcel A.
For months, correct?
It burned for 21 days before the Navy decided, well, doggone, I guess we better go tell somebody, huh? We were sitting in a meeting.
And turning all kinds of colors.
Oh,
right? Blue fire,
let me tell you
fire.
What, when I first heard about the fire, it came from a little kid that goes, Miss Marie, she couldn't say Marie, says, you ought to see the pretty flames. I said, what do you mean pretty flames? Red, yellow, blue. I go, what?
Mm.
Where? Down below my house. I go up to her house up on the hill off of Earl Street, and what do I see? Flames. Red, bright yellow. Ooh, a really pretty blue. You know, I'm thinking, oh, my God, it is pretty. But do you guys know that that's toxic? Call the Navy. We're on it. We're on it. Did you know that they had the audacity to tell me that, well, you know, we shut the place down and we don't actually have a team here that knows how to deal with an underground fire? So what do you mean?
Interesting.
With Maurice Campbell, who I call Egghead, from Community First Coalition, whom I call an egghead, we got on the internet and, believe it or not, in Alaska found a person who dealt with all fires that usually are underground fires. And the first thing he said is, do they realize that those flames mean that there's something toxic down there burning? I said, well, no, the Navy doesn't realize that, but we do. You know, he says, But one of the easiest ways to fight this fire is to drown it, then dig it up, get you some big old cement slabs and lay them out. And you got to remove all that because it's so far down, and since you don't know what's in there, it
can
catch again.
So you can't put a cap, actually.
Actually, let me tell you that the horror of building houses right up over that. While these people who were already living there were breathing in all of this stuff, and the cancer and the asthma rates started to climb through the roof.
And
lymphoma and all these other different things. Keep in mind that this fire was burning. So after the 21 days and they decided to let us know that it was toxic, gee, and everybody's going, no kidding. You mean it's really toxic, huh? And I felt like an idiot. I'm sitting up there going, I need to say, oh, really? When what I want to say is so foul that, and I keep remembering my mother, you know, at sometimes you have to be a lady, young lady, okay? And I'm thinking, ooh, my mother was still living then, and I couldn't say what I wanted to say. So I'm thinking, ooh, wee, if my mother was in another city, ooh, you need to go thank her because I can't tell you what's really on my mind.
Well, when you see genocide and experiment, there are a few things that we feel like saying.
Lennar is building houses right up over that area. Mm-hmm. But the reason why I you can't say that Parcel A is, even if they cleaned it up today, remember that the rest of that is not clean. So how you going to truck out or even barge out stuff that you got to dig up and get out of there without contaminating what was already clean? It is an impossibility.
So
you cannot do it.
Tell me a little more about that referendum.
Well, what we're looking for is a way in which to stop the threat that they don't consider is a threat to us, because remember, they think we're going to be gone.
Mm.
The idea is that they're going to build brand new houses up there and we're going to be gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know that poor folks are not supposed to be here after redevelopment.
Are we still talking about eminent domain?
We're still talking about eminent domain. You know, nasty word, isn't it? Doesn't sound very ominous, but when you look at the power that it does and the sheer ability of an agency that doesn't have
to answer to anybody.
Do people honestly realize that redevelopment is a quasi-government agency that doesn't have to answer to anybody? It is one of the only agencies that do not have to answer to anybody.
So can they actually confiscate your property if you refuse to sell?
Yes, they can. One of the things that they
can. At the lowest market value, correct?
At the lowest market value. And I got to tell you, right now, they're talking about vacant properties in Bayview Hunters Point. A lot of the folks who own those properties in Bayview Hunters Point are seniors. Most of them are. I mean, there are seniors, okay? And they have children, but they can't leave it to their children because their children are not working. They can't afford, most of the children don't have jobs, so they can't afford to do the repairs. The banks are not going to loan them the money to do the repairs. And those folks in Bayview who are allowed to get loans, you got to look at some of the deals that are being made. Do you know that one of the deals I heard about through a banker who thought it was a real good idea was that, you know, reverse mortgage. And it only on the upper level, it sounds like a real good deal. But when you start to look at it, now, a reverse mortgage is not totally bad for folks who don't have any kids and you got a house and you're getting on up in age. And so what I want to do is I want to take my money and I want to do everything else with it, but pay a house loan for the rest of my life and ain't got nobody to leave this to.
Right.
A reverse mortgage is wonderful. They pay off your loan. You take your, instead of paying a monthly mortgage, you take this money and do whatever the devil you want to do. Upon your death, that house then goes to the bank. By the time that house goes to the bank, say it cost you $200,000, by the time you decide to close your eyes, it is now worth $600,000, $700,000, $800,000. Who's winning there? I mean, no, I'm sorry. I'm just looking at this
thing. Don't
take a brain surgeon. Hey, by the way, did I tell you I wasn't one of those either? But I like I said, I deal in common sense. So who's winning there? The banks are winning. If you took your money for, if you lived for another 30 years, say if you were 67, 80 years old and you lived for another 30, 40 years, God help it. I have relatives in Louisiana that are 100. My oldest relative in Louisiana right now is 107.
Wow.
And he is now bedridden, but his 105-year-old wife still walks into town. I want to be her. Okay, no, I'm so serious. I want to be, and her mind is crisp and clear. She can tell you so many things. I don't know why they're living longer than we are. I don't know why, but that's telling you something. So under those circumstances, a reverse mortgage might be a worthwhile. But if you have children who are depending on your Social Security in order to stay in this house, and then once you have passed that demise, what happens to that child? And that child still, now they're like 60, 70 years old, and they don't have a job. And at 60 and 70 years old, do you realize how hard it is to get a job? That means not only are you competing with your son and your son's son mm-hmm. and somebody else's son, who you think they're going to hire if they hire anybody? And technology is so great, a lot of the jobs are being phased out, okay? So you are stuck with, I have seniors who are stuck living in their houses, having to go up and down these stairs, who really would rather be on a single level, can't afford to build a room in the garage where they can just walk in and walk out because the banks won't loan them the money unless they give them something to hold on to, which normally means the property. If something happens to me, then my kids are not working. My kids' kids are probably already out there trying to do their own thing and waiting on me to pass over so they done bought themselves a house and they don't make enough money to pay this note. And you know, so it's a vicious little circle. So it's called an economic lynching is what's happening in our community with poor folks. And it's growing. So under those circumstances, who is a reverse mortgage working for? But then think about it. Your home is paid for. You paid $25,000, $30,000 for your house. And some folks in Bayview actually paid less than that for their houses. You need to know that some of those houses were built well, and they were paid for what was we thought was big money, but my family would have thought was great big money back then. I wish I could buy a couple of houses for that right now, because I don't afford. You know, I'm trying to tell you, you know, because that's where it's at. But my what I'm trying to get at is that there is no out. If you have no source of income, welfare and the state are not going to pay you to live in your own house, to own it. The income tax folks are not going to say, well, you can, because you make very little money, you can live in your house tax-free. You cannot do that. It is not going to work. You cannot give that house to your kids.
Marie, you're listening to Marie Harrison.
And I'm preaching, I'm sorry.
From Green Action, our global and local sister, running for supervisor for District 10 in San Francisco. Now, Marie, for the folks who don't know you, I want to know, what's your passion? Where is your heart? Tell us a little more about Marie, the woman, the sister, the mother.
You know, actually, I've got to be honest with you, my true passion is with children. I started working on environmental issues that many years ago, but basically dealing with housing because I began when we were dispossessed, when we were replaced or removed from the Fillmore, we ended up in Bayview. And what I discovered was that, boy, these folks own their own houses over here. So maybe this is not such a bad deal, but for folks who want to go back to the Fillmore, So my passion became people. Believe it or not, my passion is people. I feel that there's not enough folks who feel people. People first. You can't be an environmentalist if you omit the people. You can't be an economic, if you eliminate the people in your everyday life. If you don't represent people, if you don't speak for those folks who cannot speak for themselves, if you don't give a helping hand to a person who is down on their luck, if you can pass by a person who says, can you help me up, and you all pass them, you have lost your humanity. My passion is people.
And that's why people who know you in Bayview unanimously say, Marie speaks for me. Because you relate to people of all color, all classes, you're for real, you're right here among us.
And I love children. I don't know why, because mine usually get on my nerves. They grow up and they stay home. My son just called me today and he said, please don't tell nobody else. And I said, but I love you better not do dirt. How come I can't tell folks? I love children. He has three beautiful babies. I love babies. Mm-hmm. I guess my passion has to be people. I'm an environmentalist by choice. Believe it or not, I actually went to school, went to college. I actually graduated with a degree. And by the way, I'm actually certified as a paralegal.
Oh, wow.
Don't do any of that. Isn't it funny how you can go to school for all these things, all these big ideas, and end up doing something altogether different?
Marie, I'm not going to say if, but when you are our supervisor in District 10, What are the concrete, tangible changes that we're going to see in District 10, let's say in 2 years from now?
In 2 years from now, if I am supervisor, you're going to note that Marie is going to be standing in front of redevelopment, either halting them, or I'm going to be on the line that surrounds them and stops them from doing their job.
That's what
until
I'm
we
about.
Own those jobs. I'm not going to ask everybody else to go out there and put themselves on the line. Marie is going to come out of City Hall and going to put herself on that line,
mm-hmm.
because until we stop them, we are in jeopardy of losing everything that we could possibly think that we can dream of. Bayview is a beautiful, beautiful community. And believe it or not, while it does have a lot of violent things going on in it now, but they've removed all the hope. When you take all of the hope away from everybody, when we have children that are looking at us saying, you know, I've got to live, how else am I going to live? Why do you think these kids are running around here claiming turf, streets that they don't own? Come on. We have young folks that are out there selling drugs, and not one of them has actually been down, a whole bunch of them, should I say. They don't even go downtown. They're running around shooting each other. They don't go even to the Cow Palace to buy these guns.
Do they even know what they're fighting for?
Oh, honey, please. Absolutely not. But my point is that you have a community that has lost everything. A lot of my folks that I work with, just to shut down this power plant, they started off thinking that San Franciscans are not going to listen to us. We don't have anything to offer. I don't speak their language. When I introduced them to a world of folks that weren't black, they weren't all white, there were some Asians, some Latin. I mean, you go the color scheme, and we found folks that actually said, I'm going to be out there to support you. Mm-hmm. I had one of my mothers sit up and look at me, and she said, you know, I almost cried. I go, why? She said, did you see all those people that came down there to the power plant to support us? And I said, yeah. She said, but Marie, they came out, and they stayed in the rain. They stayed with us.
And
I said,
won.
Yeah.
You won,
and
Marie.
And we won. But she could not mm-hmm. believe it, because she did not believe that people who lived outside of this area cared a doggone about us.
Marie, there is a very, actually, large, unheard of, almost, Samoan population in District 10, as well as in Latino population, many of them undocumented without papers. How do you foresee development and resources for the Asian Pacific and the Latino community in your district?
I'm an equal opportunity kind of person. I don't think that you can do anything for black folks, for white folks, unless you do it for Pacific Islanders or for Asian or for Latin folks. I just don't think you can afford to be a human being and make those separations. So anything positive that happens for District 10 will ripple throughout San Francisco. So you don't have to be Latin or Asian or Pacific Islander and live in District 10 to reap the benefits, because anything positive that happens in my district has to ripple into other districts, and other supervisors have to get on board with that. And by the way, we've had some supervisors who have gone against us in some really, really detrimental issues. Marie is elected. Marie sits down with these supervisors, and we close the door until we work this out. Because remember, this is one city. It's not just Bayview. It's not just those folks. It's not just a Visitation Valley. It's not just Little Hollywood. It's not just Sunnydale. It's not just Petrel. This is San Francisco. So that supervisor and I will have a closed door meeting. And, you know, I can talk my butt off. So, hey, we'll be here for a while. Look out, San Francisco. I used to joke and tell people, you know what? I'm the seventh child of a seventh child, and I'm supposed to be charmed. And when that charm comes out, I'm coming out. So y'all might as well look out for me, because I'm coming. And that my time has got to be coming, because my mother was her mother's seventh child, and her mother was her mother's seventh child.
Wow.
So
that's
three
such
times.
A magical number.
Hey, I'm three times charmed, darling. So when the charm comes out, I'm coming out. Okay, so look out, San Francisco,
right.
One way or the other. Marie's coming.
Marie, any last word of wisdom? I should say first word of power in your case.
First word of power is be powerful, think positive, and support me in all that I do, because I'm going to support you in all that you do. Come out Sunday and visit us. I can be reached at 415-720-3139. My website is www.bayview.org.
www.electmarie@freeservers.org.
Can you say that again?
www.electmarie, that's my name, M-A-R-I-E, at freeservers, one word, .org.
And your phone number again?
It's 415-720-3139. Call me.
Excellent.
By the way, you don't have to live in District 10 to support me, because I'm going to support you wherever you're at in San Francisco, and I'm going to be looking for you.
Here you go. You've been listening to Marie Harrison from Green Action, who is our next supervisor for San Francisco District 10. And you're listening to San Francisco Village Voice every Friday at 4 p.m. San Francisco Village Voice, where every cool cat got a voice. Yeah.
All right.